On this month's Reporter Roundtable, Florida sues the nation's biggest drug makers, political battles heat up, and Hillsborough attracts a Fortune 500 company headquarters. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. For insights into the most important recent news stories in Florida, we have with us Adam Smith, political editor of the Tampa Bay Times. Hi, Adam.
Hi.
And Janelle Irwin with the Tampa Bay Business Journal. Welcome.
Great to be here.
Later in the show, we're going to hear from WUSF's Julio Ochoa of Health News Florida. Adam, give us an update on one of the most watched political races in the country, Florida's U.S. Senate race between Governor Rick Scott and Senator Bill Nelson. So has Senator Nelson's campaign begun in earnest?
You know, he's in a tricky position because Rick Scott is spending so much money. He's already spent about $8 million on TV, and almost nobody can compete with that. So Rick Scott is on TV so much that people are saying, where's Bill Nelson? He's MIA. He actually was a little bit in Tampa Bay this weekend. He was doing an oil drilling event in Clearwater Beach, and he was canvassing in Sun City Center. But I think the risk for Bill Nelson is if he keeps such a low profile, the race could get away from him.
Doesn't he have any money in his war chest?
He's raised more money than he ever has before at this point.
Oh, he has.
He has, but that's still a fraction of what Rick Scott is going to have. And if he blows his money this early, he's going to be in real trouble later on.
Well, what are the polls showing at this point?
The good news for Nelson is that the last poll showed that among likely voters, it was basically a dead heat. So that's after $5 or $6 million of TV ads by Rick Scott. That's pretty good. Among registered voters, I think Rick Scott was up a few points, about 4 points.
Mm-hmm.
But if it starts to get too far away, and these TV ads really do make a difference in poll numbers, Bill Nelson's going to have no choice but start spending money.
There's still a lot of undecided voters in that race. I know there are in the gubernatorial race, but what about in the Senate race?
They're still undecided, but we're so polarized now that I think you're not going to have that many undecided. Some of it is just turnout.
Not much crossover.
Not much crossover, but you might have one side or the other not turn out as much. So, you know, the big question hanging over this election, almost every election in Florida, is Donald Trump. Is he going to be the drag that he seems to be so far in so many other places? Rick Scott, who's a very, very close ally of Donald Trump, doesn't even mention him on the campaign trail, which is pretty extraordinary. And Bill Nelson, I think you're going to see him mentioning Donald Trump as much as possible and wrapping him around Rick Scott's neck.
So Bill Nelson has been making a push for his stance on the environment. I guess he's thinking that will be in his favor. He was at an event out on the beach holding hands, which was a protest against offshore oil drilling. Janelle Irwin, speaking of the environment, we have phosphate mining in Florida. Phosphate mining has had a huge environmental impact on the state as well as an economic impact. And fertilizer giant Mosaic Company is moving its corporate headquarters from Minnesota to Hillsborough County, which is about time because their mining operations are in Florida, right?
Right. And they've got a huge, huge presence in Central Florida. And there are a lot of people from an environmental standpoint who are not happy about this corporate relocation because they see Mosaic as kind of a dirty player in terms of the environment. But I think it's important to point out from a business perspective that the relocation of their corporate headquarters isn't really going to change the level of operations that they've got going on in the Tampa Bay region in general terms.
No, I think it seems when they move their corporate headquarters where their mining is, it makes Florida feel less like a colonized entity, you know?
Yeah, indeed. And it's a huge opportunity for future relocations in the area. And we don't yet know how many jobs this relocation is going to bring here. It's actually kind of questionable whether it's going to be very many at all. It might turn out to just be their C-suite, their upper-level executives. They have said they're not ready to announce how many jobs. Meanwhile, in Plymouth, Minnesota, where they're currently headquartered, they have 150 employees in a 74,000-square-foot facility. And they told the economic development leaders in that region that the loss of jobs in Plymouth, Minnesota, is going to be barely noticeable. So that leads you to believe that of those 150 jobs, if it's not going to be noticeable, what does that leave? It leaves your top level executives who are going to come to Florida where there is no state income tax. So it seems a good move for those folks at the top.
Mm-hmm.
When I say that it's good for business, anytime you have any type of corporate relocation of headquarters, anytime you have that presence in a region, it signals to other companies that, you know, not to be cliche, but the area is open for business. And, you know, sometimes you see some other folks following suit. And I think that's what our Economic Development Corporation, I think that's what they're seeing here. They're not looking at it in terms of a huge job maker in the region, rather an opportunity to use it as sort of an advertisement for other companies to say, hey, you know, they thought we were cool. You should too.
Will this mean more tax income for Hillsborough?
Well, that obviously depends a lot on the jobs. It depends a lot on what type of capital investment we're going to see from Mosaic. We don't yet know where they're going to locate. They have given three locations, possibly downtown, obviously, Fishhawk and Highland Lake, Fishhawk and Highland Lakes is where they already have locations here. So we could see any of those places, and depending on how much capital investment they're putting into those, that could affect not just tax revenue, but, you know, other types of revenue that stem from that type of investment. And then depending on how many jobs they bring, obviously you're looking at property taxes and things like that. And if they're bringing their top level executives, these are people with not unsubstantial salaries. So, I mean, their CEO is, I believe, just under $9 million a year. So that's putting a pretty big chunk.
He'll
buy a really big house.
Well, that would be good. Have they indicated why they're moving? Why now?
No, and that's actually really interesting. When you talk about economic development corporations, that usually goes hand in hand with incentives. And there weren't any incentives used in this deal. Mosaic didn't seek any, and the Tampa Hillsborough Economic Development Corporation didn't offer any. And it's because they weren't necessarily going to be bringing a whole bunch of jobs here, is my assumption.
I think a lot of people around here heard they were coming. They already knew that Mosaic has a huge presence here, and they thought, oh, really? They weren't based in Hillsborough already?
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, I covered this, and I actually had the same thought, like, oh, I thought, you know, I see them at Port Tampa Bay, I see all the signs and everything, and it's like, oh, they were already here. But no, I mean, their C-suite was not, and that's really the big thing about it. That's a good point, Adam.
So, thanks. Adam, politically, who gets credit for this, bringing the first Fortune 500 company headquarters to Hillsborough? Bringing another corporate headquarters to Florida, who gets credit for that?
Well, first of all, I think Janelle is right that it does seem like this was something initiated by the company more than anything else. But Rick Scott is able to campaign as his message was crystal clear: jobs, jobs, jobs. Let's get to work. So anytime there's something like this, a significant Fortune 500 relocation, he can take credit for it.
Well, he doesn't get to yell jobs, jobs, jobs with this one because we have no idea how many jobs they're bringing. We have no idea what types of jobs they're bringing. And we have no idea when they're bringing them. They haven't said any of that. Their lease on their current headquarters in Plymouth runs through 2020.
But so, keep in mind, Rick Scott is a guy who's yelled jobs, jobs, jobs when a Wawa opens up. So he will certainly yell jobs, jobs, jobs next time he's in Tampa.
This is incredibly true. And when you talk about who benefits politically, the leaders in Tampa Bay are definitely trying to capitalize on that because they've got their own local races to worry about. Some very competitive stuff happening with the Hillsborough County Commission. So what I think is interesting is that nobody really made this happen. The only role that anyone had in helping them come here was to say, basically, let us help you fill out some paperwork. I mean, it was just kind of guiding them through the red tape that comes with making those moves and everything. And a lot of that hasn't even happened. The company wasn't considering any other locations besides Hillsborough County. Their only other option was to just stay put.
Okay. So, Adam, The healthy state of the economy helped lift the mood at the Hillsborough County Republican Party's Lincoln Day Dinner fundraiser, I'm guessing.
That's it. In a lot of ways, Florida is kind of a bright spot for Republicans across the country who are appropriately very worried about these midterm elections, where historically the party in power in the White House almost always loses congressional seats. Donald Trump's and his lack of popularity in polls has got everybody worried. Will the Democrats take the Senate? And yet in Florida, Donald Trump's approval ratings are slightly, they're not great, but they're slightly better here than they are across the rest of the country. And the Rick Scott versus Bill Nelson is one of the few bright spots for Republicans across the country where Republicans really have at least even odds of picking off a Democratic U.S. Senate seat. And then on top of that, you've got two very strong major candidates for governor. I think given our history, most people think that Republicans still have an edge to win the governor's race. But two very strong candidates, Adam Putnam and Ron DeSantis, both of whom came to the Lincoln Day.
Well, what were the takeaways from that event?
One of the big ones was this bizarre situation where Rick Scott, who couldn't have been cozying up and more supportive of Donald Trump throughout the election and until a few months ago, he gave a long, long stump speech where he never mentioned Donald Trump's name. So Rick Scott, who's a very conservative, partisan governor, is campaigning largely as sort of an independent-minded swing sort of governor. And I think he's really benefited from the NRA, the post-Parkland massacre that happened in what they did in Tallahassee, where he sort of bucked the NRA's wishes and did some modest gun control. I think that's really helped him.
And that should work for him because I don't think he's going to lose Republicans.
Rick Scott, without a primary, is able to move really to the center.
And he is capitalizing on that.
He
with
is.
Issues like gun control, the environment.
These are issues that were not high priorities. He was pretty much supportive of expanded drilling when he was running for governor and when he in his early years. Now he's a big opponent of offshore drilling.
I'm Robin Sussingham, and you're listening to Florida Matters. We're taking a short break, and we'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sussingham, and it's our monthly Reporters Roundtable. Here in the studio with us is Adam Smith, political editor of the Tampa Bay Times, and Janelle Irwin of the Tampa Bay Business Journal. So, Adam, you wrote recently that both the winner of the week in politics and the loser, both were Adam Putnam, the agriculture commissioner and Republican candidate for governor.
Actually, the loser of the week, it's usually easier to come up with the loser of the week, unfortunately, than the winner. The loser of the week we had is Publix grocery stores, which is, you know, one of the beloved icons of Florida, but it really got itself in the midst of ugly politics in the state. The Tampa Bay Times noted that Publix had been giving a lot of money to Adam Putnam. And so that prompted a big backlash, especially among
The Twitter mob came out.
The Twitter mob came out because Adam Putnam, he was a self-described proud sellout to the NRA. And
he supports Second Amendment rights.
He supports – yes. Not only supports
and
him, but he
no
makes
secret.
It. You go to his website on his issue. What are
his
priorities? That's sort of right up there.
Right.
So it was a vehicle for people to say, hey, Publix, I'm not going to buy your delicious subs if you're going to fund this person that's so supportive of the NRA.
Right. And he was – so that was how Adam Putnam was – involved with loser of the week, not necessarily loser of the week. And then he was winner of the week.
He was involved in winner of the week because he I think I said that the vocational and trade schools have gotten an extraordinary amount of attention. Adam Putnam, it's really one of the maybe the single biggest part of his economic platform is to promote vocational schools
right.
and trades. He says he's not diminishing four-year schools, but he wants to have a bigger push for middle school and high school training to get people into trades, plumbing, welding, things that can make good money.
I think his TV commercial says college isn't for everyone, and that's not a problem.
And it's true. And also Chris King, who may be one of the more liberal members of the Democratic primary, has a similar message. He wants to make vocational college free for everybody if he has his way. And in Congress, Ron DeSantis is pushing a bill that would help make federal student loans
Congress.
Eligible in U.S. Congress.
That's right.
Yeah. And he's giving Adam Putnam a real run for the governor's nomination.
Where is that poll right now?
That looks like it's Ron DeSantis slightly ahead, and he benefits from being on Fox News literally almost every day. I was up there with him in Washington earlier last week, and he did both Sean Hannity and Lou Dobbs within a matter of hours. And that is an incredibly effective way to reach Republican primary voters.
And, of course, he's been endorsed by President Trump.
And he seems to have been endorsed by President Trump, has said a lot of positive things about him. So he seems to be slightly ahead in the polls, but that race is wide open. Adam Putnam is sitting on a giant, giant campaign war chest of $20 million. So once that money starts getting spent, and we're now starting to see that spent on things like his vocational ed ad, maybe he can change the dynamics.
And Richard Corcoran, House Speaker Richard Corcoran, dropped out of the race this month and endorsed Adam Putnam. But I got the impression from one of your tweets that you didn't think that was as big a deal as a lot of people did.
Right. Richard Corcoran got out of the race because he was going nowhere. He'd spent several million dollars on TV. It did nothing. It's sort of a long line of legislative leaders that think they are a much bigger deal in the eyes of voters across the state than they are. So I think him dropping out of the race and endorsing Putnam means next to nothing. Maybe his wife will vote for Putnam.
Just those of us that are watching this closely
thought
it was a big deal.
Other than Donald Trump, I think there are very few endorsements that matter at all in most of these races.
Really?
Yeah, I just think people
decide on the candidate. There's nobody that's popular.
You know, if Hillary Clinton came out and endorsed Ron DeSantis, that would be a big help for Adam Putnam, I'm sure. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Speaking of that, have anybody on the Democratic side had any national endorsements like that?
Gwen Graham, because her father is Bob Graham, has gotten some endorsements like John Lewis, a civil rights icon, congressman from Georgia, and a few other people, but nobody that really is probably going to sway votes.
Okay.
Andrew Gillum has gotten a lot of progressive groups and some celebrities like Norman Lear helping him out. George Soros is putting money into his campaign.
Really?
But that race truly seems wide open.
I have to wonder, Adam, you know, both former President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden endorsed Rick Kreisman for the St. Petersburg mayoral election. Do you think they're going to weigh in at the state level?
Not in a primary, they wouldn't, but I think there's probably a very good chance in the general election. I think Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, that is somebody that a lot, especially Michelle Obama, would love to see come down and help them in the general election.
Switching gears, and that's a little pun because, Janelle, the Tampa Hillsborough Expressway Authority sponsored a driverless vehicle this month on the Selman Expressway, right? And didn't you take a ride?
I did. It was fun.
It was? What was that like?
You know, I was a little apprehensive going into it. I was sitting in the front in the passenger seat, and there was a person sitting in the driver's seat. And that was, I think, what made it so awkward because he just was sitting there. His feet weren't touching any pedals. His hands weren't touching the steering wheel. He wasn't putting the car into gear. Nothing was happening. This car just was like possessed. It's just driving down the reverse express lanes on the Selman Expressway.
Fast? I mean, 65 miles per hour?
It went slow at first, but it sped up to, I would say, about 50, 55. So yeah, and the thing that happened was like it accelerated fast. It wasn't a slow acceleration that you as a human being would do and feel comfortable with, but because it's a computer program that knows what's safe and what's not safe, it went really fast and it braked really fast as well. But it did some really cool things. They had a disabled vehicle, quote unquote, on the side of the road that this car had to slow down for and then navigate around, and it paused as if it were checking its blind spots, and it did all the things that a human driver would do, and then it safely went around it. It avoided a pedestrian. I wouldn't want to be the guy who
tested it out.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't want to be in his shoes, but he didn't get hit. So once I came out of it, I felt a little bit different about it. I wasn't quite as apprehensive, and the technology seemed a little bit more exciting once you took the fear out of it. And that was their whole point.
What was the point of this demonstration?
So they opened it up for anybody. You could go online and reserve a spot and go and ride in this autonomous driverless vehicle. And then what they did is they gave a survey to people before they rode it, and then they gave them another survey afterwards. And the idea was to gauge if there was any difference in perception based on before somebody rode in an autonomous vehicle versus after they had experienced it firsthand and not just read about it in a tech magazine or something. I haven't seen the results of those surveys
yet. Well, it's not very scientific because it's a self-selected group of people that are already interested in autonomous vehicles, I have to say.
Exactly. It is definitely not very scientific, yeah. But
it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you have to imagine there's going to be some people just out of sheer curiosity that are going to be terrified at first. We actually did, we call them business pulse surveys, and they're also non-scientific, mm-hmm. Rather just kind of to gauge what people are thinking. And it asked people, are you afraid of autonomous vehicles? Are you excited about them? And it was about 50-50 of people who, the way I phrased it was, no way, that's terrifying. There were quite a few people who said, no way, that's terrifying.
Really?
Yeah.
They're coming.
They're coming. One man I talked to,
you're ready, Adam,
said that the last person to ever have a driver's license has already been born.
And Janelle, Florida Polytechnic University offers a class in autonomous vehicles.
They do.
And they just graduated their first inaugural class. You wrote a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is their first cohort that has graduated, which was a huge milestone for them. They've got accreditation now. And they also have their SunTrax facility that's under construction. And the SunTrax facility is a place where you can safely test autonomous vehicle technology. And the hope is that Florida Polytechnic is going to kind of jump to maybe not the forefront because they're such a new university, but really put their name out there on the board as a place that is pioneering some of these emerging technologies that are really going to fundamentally change the way we think about transportation and transit.
Let's bring in Julio Ochoa, reporter and editor of WUSF's Health News Florida. Julio, Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi announced a lawsuit against manufacturers of opioid medications. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Well, she's suing opioid manufacturers and distributors. She's saying that manufacturers aggressively sold their opioids, downplaying the addictive nature of them. And distributors were sending out millions and millions of opioids without ever questioning where these drugs were going and whether they were sending too many to certain pharmacies.
So apparently Florida was getting way more than other states in the country.
Some parts of Florida worse. They pointed out Hudson got just like 2 million batches of opioids, and there's only like 33,000 people that live in Hudson. So that's why it was filed in Pasco County, which was...
That's where Hudson is in Pasco
right,
County.
Yeah, had one of the biggest problems there.
Do we know the amount of money they're expecting from the lawsuit?
She didn't specify exactly how much money that they're expecting to get, but she did say it could be into the billions of dollars.
Oh, and so what would Florida do with all that money?
That's a good question. You know, they are claiming that they've seen a lot of losses from deaths, from babies born addicted to opioids, from first responders who have to go out to treat opioid patients. They've had to pay for police departments and sheriff's offices.
So they're hoping they're going to get some of this money back.
They're hoping to recoup some of those losses.
So what's the argument from the drug companies?
They deny all of it, basically, and say that they will vigorously fight it. They actually are in settlement talks with other states. So they are saying that, you know, it's unfortunate that Florida has filed this litigation as they are going through these settlement talks, which are private. So we don't know what they're exactly discussing or maybe if money is going to flow to the state if they reach a settlement.
It's interesting because there's sort of a philosophical divide. So you've got a very conservative pro-business attorney general who's going after these opioid companies. And this is really not her thing. In most cases, she's been reluctant to get involved in these sort of things. It's taken a long time to get lawyers because of Florida's caps on legal fees. But you're even hearing some of these conservative Republican candidates go after, quote unquote, big pharma and applauding Pam Bondi. And it's just interesting with all the tort reform and just the philosophical divide. Some of these Republicans, there's such a backlash against opioids that some of these Republicans are starting to sound more like Democrats when they're talking about these big businesses.
I mean, the opioid epidemic obviously is terrible and it's hit Florida hard, but it's also complicated because when they did shut down the pill mills in Florida, people started turning to even more dangerous things. You saw more overdoses from fentanyl and things like that. I think you have doctors and you have certainly have patients who are in pain saying, you know, we need these medications.
Sure. And I think one of the issues is they're saying they aggressively marketed these pain medications and they didn't tell people how addictive they were or any of the other dangers that went along with them.
Right. Well, some of the medical marijuana litigation is starting to come to trial. John Morgan's effort to let people smoke marijuana, because so far the state has put in rules that only allow you to have the oils or tinctures, things like that, not actually smoke the weed. So that trial just started.
Yeah, John Morgan is suing on behalf of patients and advocacy organizations, asking that they be allowed to smoke marijuana. He says that was the intent of the law when voters voted on the constitutional amendment.
Right. And there was nothing in the amendment that says this will exclude smoking.
Sure. And I think that's his point. So went to court last week, and the judge says that she will be ruling on it quickly.
That's an interesting topic as well, to bridge between the opioid crisis, because a lot of the argument over medical marijuana is used to say, hey, this is something that could really help with the opioid
crisis.
Help
people get off of taking opioids.
Because there are plenty of people who say that, you know, it's something that really helps them with pain.
And Joe Redner has taken his case to the Florida Supreme Court, or he wants to take his case to the Florida Supreme Court. Joe Redner wants to grow, who's a normally referred to as the strip club owner in Tampa. He wants to grow his own medical marijuana. I believe he has late stages of cancer. And a circuit judge did rule in his favor. The Department of Health has appealed that and has put a stay on his growing it until this is settled.
Right. So he's not allowed to grow it. And so he has asked the Supreme Court to rule on it and allow him to grow it while the First District Court of Appeal decides whether or not he can. And the Department of Health actually filed something with the Supreme Court saying they should not take this up. It does not warrant their action in this case.
This all basically points to voters first voted. Clearly, the basic idea was let's let people who are sick get some relief from marijuana. There was no stipulation on let's let them inhale it, smoke it, whatever.
Or how about the only people who grow it also have to process it and sell it and have a vertical integrated business plan that costs millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
That wasn't in there either.
But then the legislature punted, and so they stuck this over with the bureaucracy. And the bureaucracy, either through intention or just sheer ineptitude, have just bollocked this up from the beginning, and it's taken forever to get any clarification. Now we're in the courts over things we're just sort of defying common sense.
We've been speaking with Adam Smith, political editor of the Tampa Bay Times, Janelle Irwin of the Tampa Bay Business Journal, and Julio Ochoa, reporter and editor of WUSF's Health News Florida. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Thank you so much.
And we always want to hear from you. There are lots of ways to reach us. You can tweet us at Florida Matters or leave a comment on WUSF's Facebook page. You can email us at floridamatters@wusf.org. You'll hear more of this conversation on our podcast, Florida Matters More. You'll find a link to subscribe on our website, wusf.org, or search for Florida Matters More wherever you get your podcast. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The engineer is Richard Jimenez. The producer is Stephanie Colombini. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.